Hey everybody, how you doing? This is Wes Wyatt, usually producer, director, food stealer, bodyguard, all the different things that Randy usually goes over. Randy is having some technical difficulties today, but we have such an awesome guest on board that I do not want to not do the show. Randy may very well pop in, but at this point, you have to deal with the big bald guy. So today we have an absolutely great guest that's a return guest. It's Carson Heady. He is an absolute great guy, and in a second, we're going to be talking to him, so stay tuned, and until we do, just watch this.
Welcome to Building Wins Live, with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director, Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Hey, Carson, how you doing?
Wes, good to see you, man. How you been?
I've been great. So, I mentioned that you were a return guest. How in the heck have you been?
Been good. Been blessed. You know, family is good overall. Work is great. And I got nothing to complain about. I get to do what I love doing. And that's always a good state to be in.
Well, Randy and I preach, you know, loving what you do and doing what you love. And I got to tell you, if there's a better way of doing things, I don't know what it is.
I don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't want to know either. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Randy would normally, you know, go through and talk to you about these things. But the very first thing I want to do is, number one, thank you for being a return guest. There's not a lot of people that have done that. So thank you very much. You're just that awesome.
Thank you.
And, you and I were talking off camera about, you know, some of the things that are going on in the industry. And Randy is the hybrid road warrior.
Absolutely.
If you would, just to kind of kick things off, if you could let me know the ideas that you have around the remote and hybrid side of this business, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Great place to start. And thanks again for having me back, Wes.
Absolutely.
It's funny because Randy and I, one of our last big interview conversations that we had was, you know, in the height of the pandemic and looking at, you know, future of work and, you know, what are all the changes that are going to transpire? And, I think he really did a great job and has done a great job of kind of prognosticating like what's coming and what's happening. And, you know, what's amazing is, yeah, I've been in sales a long time. I was just having a conversation this week with a friend of mine about the tech that has been added to sales over the years. And I remember tracking calls on, you know, pieces of paper back in the day with stick tallies. And, you know, now with all the robust analytics and the reporting that we have, it's pretty incredible. But, you know, when I think about how far we've come from a remote work and a hybrid work standpoint, what's amazing to me, first off, nothing beats face to face. It's still number one. It's still your goal. You still need to sit down across the table from somebody that you're going to negotiate a big deal with. You still need to break bread with your customers. Those things are super important, but they're not happening as prominently and as prevalently as before. So actually, they become more of an event. When I work with my team, one of the big things that we strive for is to get executive briefings where we can, you know, either fly our customers to our headquarters or meet at theirs, and, you know, spending that time together in a room, being able to look at each other in the eyes, nothing beats that. So that is still a primo goal. And in fact, if anything, it's become an event because of the prominence of hybrid work. But let me say this, what I love is all the things that have really been unlocked because of the prominence of remote work. And some of the things that I mean by that is, you know, the ability to connect with people globally. There's really no geographical barrier to how you can connect. I've been really fortunate. I've been given a lot of great opportunities to train and coach and present globally, you know, in 11 different countries in the last 2 years that I didn't set foot in. You know, they were all remote presentations. The ability to present to my CEO and his senior leadership team all in a room in Redmond, Washington, while I sit here in St. Louis. And to meet with executives all around the world over the last several years, just by sitting here in my home office. So I think the power of that and the way that the technology has really advanced, and the way, frankly, the competition in that space has upped the ante. When the pandemic began, some of the prominent tools like a Zoom and a WebEx, and they came out and they had a lot of great capabilities. I work for an organization that has a very prominent platform in that space. We upped our game because of what we were learning about what was needed in that space. And, the ability to, instantly message people on your team, your extended team, even your customers is super powerful. Another thing that I would say that I just find immense value in is the ability, in the olden days of 5-6 years ago, if I went into a customer executive meeting and I realized that I wanted to add a resource or introduce them to somebody in my organization or a specialist resource, guess what? I would have to schedule a follow-up. That might be 2-3 weeks down the road. That call, that conversation may be punted because of, something happening with scheduling. But in today's day and age, I can type a few words in an instant message. I can press a button and add that person to the conversation in real time. It gives you the ability to accelerate momentum and realize momentum. If you realize you forgot to add a resource to a conversation, you can add them in real time. You can press a button and pull your entire team together and have a conversation. There's so many things that are possible. What's amazing is 5 years ago, my entire team that I led was here in St. Louis. And now my team is scattered all over the country. And so it's amazing the capabilities that we have from a sales perspective to connect without geographical barriers, to add resources in real time, to almost read the mind of your colleagues and your vendors and your partners by messaging them while you're in a meeting. Obviously, I don't recommend doing a lot of multitasking in these calls, but it's really great when you're in a conversation that maybe is going off the rails a little bit and you're able to bring it back just through some back channel instant messaging. And then the last thing I would say in that regard, Wes, is the prominence and surgence of AI, the ability to take the transcript from the meeting, have meeting notes output, and I was having a friend of mine this week showed me how he was using Gong and the ability to take the transcript of a meeting in like milliseconds and turn it into a follow-up email highlighting all of the bullet points. I mean, think about the time saver. You were talking about our pre-conversation, when we were in the green room prepping for this call today, we were talking about AI. It's incredible what it can do already, and I can't wait to see where it goes. But I say all of that about technology and about AI with the caveat of it ups our game as pure practitioners of the noble selling profession that we've got to do it right. We've got to keep the personal touch. We've got to prioritize our customers. We can't get lost in the tech. We can't hide behind the tech, but we've got to use it to get closer to our customers.
I couldn't agree more on all the points that you just said, I was just showing my wife, oddly enough, this morning, I have a app called Voice Notes, and what it does is quite simply allows you to talk into it. It transcribes it instantly. And then I said, watch this. And it was literally just me going through and giving almost a brain dump, very quickly about some stuff. I can go into it. I can press a button. I can have a blog post made from it. I can have a summarization of the main points done. And it lays it out in a way that you wouldn't even believe. Another thing is that I was just at a conference out in Salt Lake City for a network marketing company. And I got started in 1987 in network marketing. There were fax blasts. There were, cassettes, the old Dead Doctors Don't Lie, if you remember that
thing. Yeah.
Go around, and you would have to write out number one paper, applications for people, which meant you had to either be at a home party, you had to drive to a hotel meeting, you might drive to a conference if they had them. They didn't really have, the big conferences that they have now. I mean, now they're just insane events. But I think about the days of back then, because I was talking to somebody and I said, they built these, million-dollar companies and organizations, and people would say, "Oh, you did that, but it's not that big of a deal." And I say it's an absolute big deal because they did it the way I'm talking about before. The, absolutely no technology whatsoever. I mean, at the best, a tape deck, which eventually, you know, might have been a CD. But now, you know, they can go through and I can talk to people from all around the country. When I meet them, I can send them a instant contact that has all my information. I can then follow them and then see the things that they're doing. Whereas before, I'd have to talk to them either on the phone or I'd have to go and meet them. So the technology has just gotten absolutely insane. And you are so right about, you know, the fact that, you know, you can do something sitting in St. Louis that you used to. You and I just spoke about this on the in the green room. I used to fly out from Ohio to at Microsoft, you know, to run their Windows hardware quality labs, the Wickle team. And, you know, we couldn't do that, you know, on a conference call back then, because even though there was a conference call, video conferencing really wasn't a thing back then. You know, so it's just so very, very, very exciting, you know, to be able to have this, like you said, remote, hybrid, and all that. And all that. The shaking hands, kissing babies is still awesome. But to be able to sit here in your home and have that world shrink so small, you know, to where, you know, you and I are friends and have never met. And that's incredible. You know, so I 100% on everything that you said.
Yeah, man. Look, it keeps it makes us more efficient and productive if we do it right. But at the same token, it doesn't change the fundamentals of sales. You know, sales is still all about relationships. Yes, there are ways that you can leverage technology. And, you know, I've leveraged LinkedIn to generate relationships with executives that's ultimately generated over $1 billion of revenue that never would have existed without LinkedIn. But if it didn't exist, I would have found those relationships ideally in other ways. And I think that's the key element, is that we've always had a best way to go out and do something. But at the end of the day, it's still all about going out and creating better relationships, earning trust, earning the right to be that trusted advisor with our customers. Those are the top priorities, and they always will be.
I couldn't agree more. So how about prospecting today, Carson? Can you give me your thoughts on that?
Yeah, when I talk to sellers, you know, Wes, I get the feedback I get on prospecting is, you know, like contactability is one of the biggest challenges that they face. And in fact, you know, when I joined Microsoft 10 and a half years ago, the week Satya Nadella became CEO, you know, the stock price was $34 a share that day. Now it's over $400 that I get to share in that nice trajectory line, though I give him more of the credit. I remember hearing all of our leaders talking about, hey, you know, we've got a lot of IT and procurement relationships, but we've got to get to, if we want to be looked at as a trusted partner, we've got to get to the other lines of business. We got to talk to the C-level, the board. We got to talk to the CFO, the VPs, things of that nature. And I remember hearing that, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, a lot of these people, they're out on LinkedIn. Let me use LinkedIn and go out and see if I can't create relationships out there. And I did. And I was able to bring in one of the largest deals in the channel's history in multiple channels by going out and leveraging LinkedIn, or by going out and leveraging marketing leads or leads in CRM that might have otherwise lied dormant, where nobody was touching these folks. You know, I look at, I don't know if you're a fan of the movie Ghostbusters. It's one of my favorite ever.
Huge.
So just like Peter Venkman said in Ghostbusters 2, there's many subtle levels of clean laundry. There's many subtle levels of warmth of leads. You know, if you get somebody that calls in and wants to talk to you, or you get a warm referral, that's about as warm as it gets. But we don't get those all the time as salespeople. We've got to go out there and be creative and be scrappy and be resourceful. And so what I started doing is looking at some of these customers that might have made past purchases or attended a webinar or an event or whatever it was, downloaded a white paper. And I started manually going out and grabbing some of these folks that had opted into being contacted, but nobody was talking to them. And I started creating my own newsletters and events and things of that nature, really building community around these folks that were already engaging with us. And I've come to call it kind of fondly my Moneyball approach to sales, because I'm a firm believer if you've got the right people executing the right process, as Bill Walsh, the great 49ers coach, would say, the score takes care of itself. And so I think the key element is I'm all about going out and how can I touch these leads, these contacts in an effective way, nurture them, you know, passively educate them so that when they're ready to buy, they'll reach out. But also going out via LinkedIn to go out and connect with people and ask them for meetings. And here's how I would do it. You know, I work for an organization where a lot of these customers, you know, they leverage us in some way, or they may have some relationship. They don't all love us. But I took a very counterintuitive approach. You know, I would take the reasons that customers would not take a meeting with me, and I would flip it on its head. So I had customers that would say things like, you know, hey, you're the biggest check we write. I don't want to buy more. You guys only show up when it's renewal time. And, you know, like a lot of our account executives, I mean, they had hundreds of accounts. So that was probably why it was that way. Does it make it right? But I would start to reach out to customers and say, hey, you know, I'd love to talk to you about the resources that you're entitled to because of your significant investment. And, you know, who in the world wouldn't want to talk about resources that they're entitled to or have their investment acknowledged? And so I started being able to get meetings left and right. See, I'm a believer, especially when it comes to prospecting or really any sales motion, you can control some things and you've got to control the controllables. There's a lot of things you can't control. I can't control who's going to respond. I can't control, you know, what state of the business that they're in. Like if I'm truly in need at that given moment, but I can control the quality of my message. I can control the quantity of outreaches that I make, and I can control the consistency by which I prospect over time. And by controlling those elements, you know, kind of gamifying my sales approach with my Moneyball approach, I've been able to get just about any meeting I want ever. The biggest one, I did a 9-figure deal where, you know, we had zero relationship with this customer. They were actually looking at the competition because a organization that they knew and trusted was doing business with this competitor. I managed to reach out to the president on LinkedIn, got a meeting with him the following week, went out there, brought him a copy of my CEO's book, highlighted some passages that I thought would resonate. There was this commercialization model that they wanted to do. We were a better partner for them than this competitor. I was able to prove it, and took a while. And I was in a pandemic with a healthcare organization. So it was an interesting run. It had 7 C-level changes in those 2 years. But we landed a 9-figure deal at the end of it. And so my point in saying all that is prospecting comes down to figuring out what you can control. I reached out to over 500 people in that organization at various times. I had over 100 that I was, you know, met in person, 200 plus that I was connected with on LinkedIn. So, you know, all the while you're able to pepper things in, you're inviting them to events, you're sending them newsletters, you're touching them. And then you're having meetings with a lot of the executives. And it didn't replace the need for a lot of the core fundamentals of selling. You know, I still had to, you know, build out a roadmap with them, plan milestones with them, mutual accountability and things of that stature. But the prospecting piece, really being diligent about what was the messaging that I was sending. How was I building a sphere of influence within that organization and earning the right to be a trusted advisor? And a lot of times for sellers, especially for me, like I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I'm not overly technically savvy. I'm not a healthcare professional, but I have a lot of people on my team that are. And so I can get the meeting and then I bring the smart people in and then I get out of the way, let some magic happen and then make sure that things progress in advance. But that's how I feel like prospecting has changed. You know, it's amazing, Wes, right now, one of the things that I'm working on with the advent and the prominence of AI, as well as going, and we were talking about this in the green room, you know, I'm going out to customer websites and, you know, earning reports, things that are publicly available, having AI very quickly search them and leverage that to write me an email template to send to these customer executives. And, you know, obviously, here's the thing, you don't use the AI generated material 100%. There's a reason, like we call it our co-pilot, because that's exactly what it is. You're going to take this material. You got to make sure it has the personal touch, but it gives you a higher probability of response when it's personal and it's personalized. See, in this age of AI, what's going to get lost is because we're going to be flooded. We're going to be flooded with these fake emails and fake posts. Your customer executive that you want to talk to, they're getting thousands of messages per month that are garbage. And you've got to figure out a way to stand out from the noise. And that's why I encourage people when you're prospecting, use any medium that you think might matter to get a meeting with these folks, whether it's leveraging video, leveraging voice, you know, things that make you stand apart from the crowd. The last thing I will say, I got a meeting with a CEO that I followed on LinkedIn for about a year. And for about 6 months, I commented on everything he posted. He was a prolific poster. And I would comment on every post, you know, and it was more than just like a, this is great or cool or whatever. It was, you know, hey, this is really thought provoking or hey, congratulations on this innovative work. And what was amazing, I mean, we even developed like such a posting, commenting conversation that like we were sharing book recommendations in his posts at times. And he would make comments like, hey, I mean, coming from you, like I take this as a big recommendation. And like, we'd never spoken. So what was amazing, he was the COO of this organization. He got promoted to CEO. And that's when I decided to make my move. I sent a congratulatory email, asked for a meeting, and got it immediately. He knew who I was. So what I think is amazing today is we have social media at our fingertips where you can go out and create relationships, build a brand, create credibility without ever meeting anyone. And your reputation will still precede you. And there are still ways that you can parlay these relationships, these connections into meaningful meetings, meaningful face-to-face, meaningful deals.
You just packed in so many things in that second, you know, set there, Carson, that I can't even keep my thoughts and questions straight with you. But a couple of things I wanted to touch on. You know, I remember a story from Gary Vee very, very early in the wine library days of him having his social media team send out jerseys of something of someone that really liked a team and just saying, hey, you know, here, I see that you're a fan of XYZ player. Here's a signed jersey. You know, if for some reason or another you ever have a need, you know, for a function that has the wine, if you consider us, that'd be great. And him talking about the return on that, you know, just what it will may have cost, let's say $500, you know, for someone that he knew the juice was going to be worth the squeeze, at least likely, you know, end up being, you know, thousands of dollars in revenue, you know, from just one simple gesture. When it comes to LinkedIn, you were talking about bots sending out these, you know, very impersonal messages. I'm assuming in most cases when I get these, that even the profile picture isn't real. It's probably generated by, you know, some sort of AI in some way, shape, or form. But instead of getting that, and I don't mean to keep giving so much kudos to Gary Vee, but you know, he talks about, you know, when you're dating a girl, you whisper in her ear, take her out, you know, do a lot of things before trying to close the deal. You know, so the people that are on LinkedIn many times, and I say people very loosely because I honestly think they're bots, but when you get these messages that immediately don't say hello, how you doing, anything, just immediately go into, hey, you know, our sales team can do XYZ for you, and just, you know, jump right into the meat and potatoes. What is something, or maybe a couple somethings that you would suggest for a brand new user or a person that hasn't been doing it correctly on LinkedIn to foster those relationships in a way that doesn't immediately vomit on people with, you know, whatever it is that they offer, and do that again, Gary V, you know, jab, 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 and then the right hook, you know, to talk to them.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's a great call out. I think there's a lot of junk out there, you know, and I hope that a lot of those are bots, because I hope that real people aren't sending messages with no profile picture and verbal vomiting everything that their solution does. But some probably do. And to your point, like, I think the key element is to realize the power that is at our fingertips now with things like LinkedIn, you know, to be able to get that level of intel about your target prospect, to be able to create relationships and nurture a brand that can help you in your career. If you're getting started on LinkedIn or really with anything around prospecting, you know, the key element is to understand, like, what's your value proposition? You're also not going to win against your competition going toe to toe on their strengths. And I think that's important to realize. There's a lot of people, a lot of organizations that do just that. You know, they try to go out and they try to beat their competition based on, like, what they're great at. You know, and they try to go toe to toe saying, like, our great things are better than their great things. But here's the thing. You haven't uncovered a need. Your customer, your prospect, they may love that great thing about the competition. I read a really good book this last year that just made me kind of stop in my tracks. In fact, literally, I was mowing the grass listening to this audio book, and my neighbors probably thought I was insane because I just kept stopping and taking notes, and they were like, what is this clown doing? but it was called The Jolt Effect by Matt Dixon and Ted McKenna, the guys that wrote The Challenger Sale. And, you know, what it is, Wes, it basically looks at, you know, now that we're in this hybrid slash remote work world, we have the ability like never before to study mass numbers of calls, sales calls. And I mean, they basically studied, I want to say like tens of thousands of calls and in essence found all these trends. And, you know, where we've always thought that like FOMO, fear of missing out, or risk, fear of losing something is going to be what prompts a customer to move. It's not the case. It's actually fear of messing up that keeps a customer doing status quo. They're not married to their current path. They're not married to their current avenue. They just don't want to be the guy or the girl who made the decision to make a move and it implodes because then it's on them. So they'll stay doing what they were doing unless you de-risk that decision for them. And really what that tells me is that it's all the more important that you earn the right to be that customer's trusted advisor. There have been so many times where I've shown up trying to add value. I mentioned earlier how I get meetings, and that can be true of really anything. I mean, there's a value prop that your organization has, whether it's you're able to demystify something in the industry or able to create relationships for them that they don't already have. There have been a lot of customers where I wasn't an obvious fit right out of the gate. But I've had so many customers tell me that they did business with me, even though I was more expensive, because they knew they could trust me. I was responsive. I was communicative. Even if I didn't have the right answer, I would always, you know, follow up regularly. I would copy them in with the people that I was trying to get the answers from and with. They knew where they stood with me, and they knew I would always be responsive. And I think, and there were even times where I would make recommendations for my customer to go to the competition. I'm like, we're not a fit here. But I've got a friend of mine who's at the competitor. Let me introduce you. I want to make sure you're taken care of. And so guess what that does? That shows that no matter what, I'm going to be honest with them. I'm not going to try to fit the round peg in the square hole just to get a deal. And furthermore, they'll come back to me. They'll come back to me because they know I'm going to give them the best answer for them, that I've got their best interests at heart. See, all we're ever doing, Wes, in sales is we're investing. We're investing in relationship. We're investing in our career trajectory. And I found that if I go out and I create a win for everybody in my sphere, everybody I touch, my customer, I got to know what looks like a win to them. And I also have to understand what they perceive as risk so that I can remove that risk. That's why they're going to move forward. If you remove legitimate barriers to success, the path's clear for success. And that's the key element. Furthermore, where I've worked in situations where I have robust extended teams, you know, I might have 30, 80 people that touch my market. And guess what? They're not going to just inherently fall in line and want to work with me or for me. I've got to give them the with them. And so going out and understanding, like, what are their motivating factors? What matters to them? How can I help them? You know, I had a really robust team a couple years back, and, you know, they were all specialists in different areas, and I needed every one of them. And I created a program called Plays That Get You Paid. And I went out and I figured out every one of them's comp structure. And I went to them and I said, look, if I'm going to create opportunities in my prospecting that are going to most benefit you, the biggest payouts, you name it, what does that look like? And we constructed this program. These guys loved me because I was going out and I was creating conversations and introducing them to executives that they could get big deals with. And so it's being mindful of the playing field. Know the playing field, know the people, know how you can bring maximum value and impact to everybody that you touch. That's what's going to propel you to the next level.
That's great. You know, and I think that whole what's in it for me, concept is awesome. You know, Randy and I, of course, speak about building wins and the whole idea of, being a brand ambassador and delivering on the stuff that you bring to the table, not your product, your service, your company, because everyone does that. If you're talking only company, only product, only service, unless it's your product, company, and service, you have to be able to deliver the things that you can do. And then also, I mean, when you talk about, you know, being able to refer a customer to or a client, someone else, when they hear that, they're going to know that you're not in it just with that sales breath, you know, and I think that is just absolutely powerful. So that was a great, great answer. What is a couple tips that you have on furthering a sales career, Carson?
I love that question. I talk to a lot of people about this. You know, I'm very lucky to, you know, get the opportunity to coach and mentor and train a lot of sellers. And, you know, I think, again, it's one of those areas where you've got to be very mindful of what's at your disposal. Number one, you know, ensuring that your LinkedIn is up to date, that it really touts your unique skills. You've got to be plugged into what your unique skills and superpowers and passions are and how they can elevate everybody else around you. See, I realized long ago, especially at Microsoft, I'm not overly technically savvy, but I can go out and I can eliminate the problems that my leadership and my customers call out. And I can learn and I can study. So I had a very rough year my first year as an AE. It was strong. It was a strong growth year, but I missed my number. Only time in my life. Never happened again. And here's why. Because I went in and I meticulously studied what worked and what didn't. And I built on it. So you've got to be a student in your career. You want to work toward mastery of your role. And, you know, one of the benefits of age and wisdom, ideally, is that you start to figure out, like, you know, in my 20s, I thought I was, I thought I knew my path. I thought I was always doing the right thing. I grew up in a sales culture that, you know, you felt like you always had to be the smartest person in the room. And I was glad that I learned that that was not the case. I was glad I got away from some of the lone wolfish, very, you know, hyper competitive environments. Don't get me wrong. My environment now is very competitive, but the reason that I succeed is because I'm looking at how I can elevate everybody else around me. It's far less about me. And also looking at how to sharpen the axe. You know, what are the podcasts that you're consuming? What are the books that you're reading? You know, even on our team meetings now, we have sessions around, like, what are you learning? Where we're sharing best practices. See, I always went out and I found the people that were performing in the metrics that I wasn't. And I learned from them. I wanted to assimilate what they said into my arsenal. Or when I wasn't technically savvy and, you know, I had technical specialists or architects on calls with customers, I would listen to them do the spiel a couple of times. And I'd say, hey, guys, can I do the next one? And I would. I'd learn how can I take what they're doing and assimilate that into my arsenal to make me better. We're always going to be a conglomeration of our environment. And if your environment isn't conducive to your growth, create a new one. Now that's, again, you know, we go back to what we were talking about earlier, Wes. You know, you can find anybody. You know, you can have a mentor halfway around the world now. It's just so empowering. The other things that I think have been really instrumental for me are, you know, development of personal brand. I started using LinkedIn and, you know, the early, I guess, 2008, 2009, 2010. There was a gentleman at a consulting firm, a small consulting firm that I worked at years ago that said, hey, you know, use LinkedIn to find ways to stay top of mind. I started using it to go out and create relationships with executives. But what I realized is that I have this penchant for sales and leadership and building team culture. And I love talking about these things. And so, you know, I started posting my experiences and telling stories. And my advice to you is, no matter where you are in your career, whether you're starting out, whether you're midway or you're nearing the end, you've got a story that'll resonate with somebody. Somebody is stepping into the similar shoes to where you are now and would benefit from your story. You know, I made a post the other day about I've applied to 3,058 jobs in my career that I didn't get. You know, a lot of people would look at my resume, my LinkedIn, and say, this guy's successful. But like, it doesn't always feel that way. I've been laid off multiple times. I've applied to a lot of jobs I didn't get. I've been turned down for jobs. I had a job created for me once that was handed to somebody else. I mean, you know, your career is going to take some wild twists and turns. So again, like anything else, control the things that you can control. Control how you show up. Control your LinkedIn presence. Control what you talk about. Control the relationships that you go out and create. Go out and find mentors that are doing or training or hiring for what you might want to do or where you have interests. Study. You know, one of the things that I love doing now is getting book recommendations from just about everybody that I talk to. I have a very robust list of books that are on the grid and on the radar, and I'm just constantly consuming content. And you know what's great is, like, nowadays, I mean, I've got a book on my, you know, I've got a hardback on my desk. I've got a Kindle so that, you know, when I'm like out and about, and then I've got an Audible when I'm out in the car. Like, you know, it's amazing the ability by which we can consume all of this great material that makes us better. The last thing I'd say on career, every meaningful move I've ever made has been because of relationships or reputation or both, but mostly relationships. And there was one time after I got laid off in 2010, took a year. I applied to like 1600 jobs in this time. But the next job I got, my resume stood out because I'd written my first book in 2010. And that was the only thing that made my resume stand out. That was the reason that this person picked me to be part of the first cycle of 300 resumes that were selected to go to the next round. And then that's why I got an interview, was because I wrote a book. I was one of 30 people to get an interview. And I got the job because I was the best in the room. But you got to earn your way into the room. And, you know, you got to become the obvious choice for whatever you want to do. And sometimes being the obvious choice doesn't mean you're going to get it. There's a lot of challenging things that are going to happen in your career. And look, I am where I am because of scrappiness, resourcefulness, and resilience. I like to consider myself the Rocky Balboa of sales. I will not stay on the mat. Doesn't matter how many times I get knocked down, told no, you know, lose a deal, whatever it is, I will be back 10 times harder. And that's what I encourage you to think about, is that, you know, careers are challenging. Navigating them is challenging. And your next job may not even exist today. You know, are you willing to embrace, you know, the freeness and, you know, kind of the excitement of that fact? You know, ideally you find unique ways that you can leverage your skills and your superpowers to make everybody around you better and to deliver wins and outcomes. And if you do that, you'll develop a reputation that will help you win. I said last piece, but this is really the last piece. Construct a career walking deck. I've got one that has served me really well. I had a mentor a couple of years back and I saw their format and I adopted their format. But it was really intentional about, you know, and again, just like a resume or a LinkedIn, don't make it sound or look like everybody else. Give it unique flair. But you ultimately want to paint the picture that the hiring manager is going to look at your materials, your resume, your career walking deck, and say, this person is the obvious choice. You've got to, just like you're talking to a customer, you've got to de-risk their hiring decision, because you're asking them to gamble on you. There might be 100, 10, or, you know, 1,000 candidates for this role, and you're asking them to gamble on you. So how are you going to de-risk the decision? You got to show them that you've got the experiences and the ability to walk in and do this job and to do it well, or minimize the ramp time. But be respectful of ramp time. Don't tell them that there is no ramp, because there's ramp in every role. You don't want to, you know, devalue the ramp of the role. I mean, every role has its own unique nuances, but you do want to tell them that and convince them that the ramp time for you is going to be minimal, that you're going to come in, you've got a plan, and you're going to be successful. But a walking deck gives you the ability to showcase some of your key wins, your experiences, things that are going to be relevant to what you want to do next. And that's how you can, in essence, can better control and navigate your career.
You know, Carson, there's a reason that you're a return guest. That has just been it could honestly be a TED talk at this point. I mean, it'd
be awesome.
Yeah, it's been absolutely incredible. The first thing I want to do is I want to bring up your book. And if you could just give me a couple minutes of this book and anything else that you have out there, why somebody would want to read it, and a little bit of information about it, if you would.
Yeah, no doubt, Wes. Look, in 2008, 2009, I came to this epiphany. I'd always wanted to write a book, but I didn't know what to write about. And I was writing a newsletter column at the time. I was at AT&T, and I was writing a newsletter column about sales and leadership for the department. And I just it kind of struck me like, hey, I really enjoy this. And I'd love to write a book about sales and sales leadership, but there's a lot of them out there. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. So what I decided to do was write a book inside a book. It's basically a sales book inside a novel about a fictional character that I created who goes through things that a lot of us go through in our career. You know, he had a very fast start. You know, he was kind of a young phenom, and he had to get kind of batted down back to earth. Had, you know, learn how to play the political game, you know, all the lessons that sometimes we learn too late or learn the hard way. This guy learns them all the hard way. He's very hard headed, had some similarities to a young me, believe it or not. And so that book was called Birth of a Salesman. It came out in 2010. I wrote a couple others. I realized my sales philosophies had changed dramatically in my 30s. And so I actually revisited them in 2016 and I repackaged them as The Birth of a Salesman Ultimate Edition. So in essence, there's six books in one, if you look at all the books inside the book. And I said I was done, right? I've made a few new moves. The pandemic came and Salesman on Fire was born. And what Salesman on Fire is about, it borrowed a lot from an experience that I had several years ago as my first year back as an individual contributor account executive and MS Goal for the only time in my career. And look, I was on a performance plan. I had 1 foot out the door and I didn't think it was fair and I could go into that, but doesn't matter. I mean, the facts are the facts. I was on this performance plan and it was either accept that I was on my way out or double down and be successful. And this is the story of how I doubled down and decided to be successful. Won every award that I could possibly win, got promoted 5 times since then. Salesman on Fire, there was a guy that I worked with at the time and he nicknamed me Man on Fire, like the Denzel movie. And that's where I got the title of the book. It's a standalone, you know, it's the same character loosely, but he's now in his 40s and basically just kind of throws him through the ringer. And Salesman on Fire goes back and forth between chapters of things that are relevant in sales to the story of this fictional character.
That's great. You know, as you can see behind me, I'm an avid reader. I love the fact that the Jolt Effect, we are very same in that, you know, and many of the relationships that Randy and I have been able to, kind of foster has been from bringing people like yourself on the show, especially, like a Larry Levine, talking about his latest book. It's a great time to meet people like that because they're out there pitching and kissing babies and shaking hands and trying to get it out to the masses. And then, you're able to glean something from it because not only do you get to read it, but then you'll ask them, who's a couple people that you follow. They give you the books. And next thing you know, it's another. Yeah. I'm reading The Closers. To meeting Ben Gay III on this show.
Yeah.
And then Randy and I going out and meeting him in person, him and his beautiful wife, Gigi, and staying for a couple of days, interviewing him for a couple of days. Wow. And now, Randy and I are going to be writing The Closers number 6. Wow. With him. So the relationships and all the things that you've talked about, in essence, in some way, shape, or form, if you keep swinging, if you keep, building wins, if you keep, I love your Rocky reference because I can just picture you, walking out and being defeated in one of those 3,000 plus, interviews or job applications. But in your head, the person that is talking says, "I didn't hear a bell."
Yeah. So I love on that note, Wes. So I got to share this. So, if you haven't read them, David Goggins has a couple of amazing books. One of them is called Never Finished. And the other one, the name is escaping me right now. I'll try to look it up while I'm on. But he has this interview where he talks about this. And it's funny, it resonated with me, but I had always felt the same way. There's this scene in Rocky I, the 14th round against Apollo. So now keep in mind, Rocky had zero chance on paper he shouldn't have even been in the fight. He was a last minute replacement for somebody who couldn't be in the fight. He got a 1,000,000-to-1 shot to fight the heavyweight champion of the world, Apollo Creed, RIP Carl Weathers, who just recently passed. And what's amazing is in this scene, Rocky gets knocked down in the 14th round. All he wanted to do was go the distance in this fight. That's all he wanted to do. And Apollo was predicting he was going to win in 2 or 3 rounds or whatever it was. And they're in the 14th round. Rocky goes down. Even his trainer, Mickey, is saying, "Stay down." And Rocky just like pulls himself back up. And Apollo is like blown away. I can't tell you. I've had tough negotiations that I've gone into. I've had tough losses dealt to me. I've had deals that have gone haywire left and right. I'm one of those schmaltzy guys. I'll watch clips from these movies and they lift me up and make me feel like I can do anything. You got to find your motivation from somewhere. I found a lot from Rocky I.
No, that's awesome. And this conference that I was just at in Salt Lake City, we had the Iron Cowboy. And I don't know if you know him or not, but he did 50 Ironmans in 50 days in 50 states.
Oh my God.
And insane. I mean, I would highly recommend, you know, anybody to go check that out. But, you know, the drive, the, you know, just, you know, esprit de corps for life and never having that, you know, defeating spirit is just something that, I'm not kidding. If you could look at my arm, I've got goosebumps, and I'm
loving it, man.
I mean, just I am 1,000% with you on this stuff. So we always ask this, and I'll ask you very quick because I've taken a lot of your time today, Carson. But could you let me know what I'm going to call a Mike Koenig term, the coin the phrase? It's a should ask question instead of a FAQ, an SAQ. What's something that people never ask you that you wish they would?
Wow. That is a good question. By the way, that David Goggins book is called Can't Hurt Me. So check it out. I should ask question. I would say, what do you feel like is the biggest secret to your success? I don't get asked it a ton. And my answer would be, it's very much in line with what we were just talking about, Wes. And I think about this interview that Tom Brady did. And, you know, if you know anything about Tom Brady, and look, I was not a Patriots fan. I'm a huge San Francisco 49ers fan. But I have mad respect for the greats, the greatest athletes. I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan. He's the greatest of all time, obviously. But Brady said something along the lines of, because he was Mr. Irrelevant. You know, he was drafted very late in the draft. You know, was not slated to be a starting QB, got a shot. And now we look at him as, you know, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, though I would argue Joe Montana is. But be that as it may, his comment was, you don't have to be special to have success. You've got to be resilient. You got to have the right mindset, and you've got to have the right attitude. And I would say that to literally anyone out there that is, you know, getting started in a rut, struggling, or just wants to take their career to the next level. You know, those are the things that we've really got to think about. You can have great success by figuring out your unique differentiators and how you can make everybody else around you better as a result. And I think that's the secret to success. There's nothing special about me. I'm just a guy from the Midwest United States who, you know, managed to create a lot of relationships and love sales. And I loved it enough that I went back and I really studied meticulously what worked and what didn't. And I've changed my process as a result of that. And those learnings, that can be applied anywhere. I genuinely love the game. I, you know, share my tips and tricks and thoughts and practices for the masses. I know the competition is out there. They can read what I do. I publish my playbook any day because I think it's for the good of the game. I welcome competition. Competition makes us all better. And I've learned enough in my years on earth that, you know, it's really all about the ride. And it's about the journey and it's about the experience. Just keep learning and keep moving forward.
Well, Carson, here's the thing. You're back for your second. I hope you're back for a third, a fourth, a fifth, and
anytime.
More, because this information is just absolute pure gold. And I'm not telling you that to, you know, blow smoke at you. This has been quite possibly one of my favorite wins, you know, that we've done. So I can't thank you enough for being on, and, you know, make sure that you're on a stranger with us.
Great to see you again, Wes. I'll come back anytime, man. And glad things are going well for you.
They're going well because I am above ground, my friend. As Les Brown would say, it's better to be viewed or seen than viewed, right?
Well said.
Well, I'll tell you what, Carson, you have a great day. I'm going to actually be popping on another Rack and Stack with Randy, assuming he's not having any technical difficulties. So I'll leave you alone and not put you in the green room. But guys, make sure that you check out Carson. You're going to see all his information down here. Just go to Carson V. Hetty at WordPress.com. Check out his books. Check out all his media. And when you do so, you're going to be absolutely glad that you did. And again, Carson, I can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Thank you, Wes. Tell Randy I said hey.
I will do that. You have a dynamite day.
Back at you, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Woo, man, guys, I don't know about you, but that was a absolute, you know, college course, you know, doctorate degree in awesomeness. And if you didn't get anything from that, then you might want to check your pulse, because that was pure gold. So on behalf of the great Randy Chafee, my buddy and pal, who unfortunately had, like I said, some technical difficulties, I want to thank you for being part of another episode of Building Wins. And until we talk to you next time, have a dynamite day. Go out there, make sure that you do what you love and love what you do. And as Randy would say, as always, go out there and make today the best day ever. Until tomorrow. I'll see you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.